development, committee oversight six departments and 31 entities. Among the departments, the Department of Transport, Department of Energy, Department of Labor, Department of Public Works, Department of Economic Development, and the Department of Small Business Development. So are the 60 departments. But I won't go to the entities. As I say, there are 31. So each of the committees has its own entities. Altogether, they are 31. Special welcome to our special delegates from the provinces. Also like to welcome the officials from the department, the DG. Thank you for your presence as well, because I was worried as a person that if you didn't come, the only way that we're going to deal with this bill would have been after SONA next year, because our program up until the 6th of December is packed. So if you didn't come, there was no way that we're going to deal with this bill this year. So I'm very glad that the DG is here, because we have taken a decision now that if the minister, deputy minister, or DG are not attending this meeting, we're not going to continue with the meeting. Let me also take this opportunity to, there are some changes with regard to the committee in Parliament. I've seen the ATC. That our whip of the committee is now a member of the committee on the security, I think, and Copeland. He will be chairing that particular select committee. Honorable Msanga is a new member of this committee now, and also is designated as the provincial whip of Mpumalanga. I'd like to congratulate Honorable Mchimunye, who's been a member of this committee since 2014, and wish him well in his new portfolio. But also would like to welcome Honorable Msanga in his absence. I've been told by the committee secretary yesterday that he has tendered us an apology. We'll formally welcome him when he attends the future meeting. I've already introduced myself. I'm going to allow honorable members to introduce themselves, and then also then ask the PG to introduce his team. Start on my left.
My name is Eddie.
My name is Nkosi Sawamu. I come from this member of the council.
Good morning, Willem Schauber, representing the Northern Cape.
Steve Maguevo from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Jacob Gowen from Housing Legislature. Chair, my name is Wilmar Jonsebo. I'm part of the committee.
Over to you,
Chair. My name is Kawaka from the Northwest Chapter of the Portfolio Commission of Public Work.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Chair, just before we introduce the team, Chair, we would like to firstly apologize for what happened last time. It was not our intentions. I think from the office, from my office in particular, and for which I take full responsibility, we had a practice, or we have a practice, that we would come, introduce the bill, and then allow the technical people to deal with clause by clause. But in this instance, I think they missed the fact that, because it spent a year in the portfolio committee, they missed the fact that it is coming into the new committee. And that is where there was that slip up. But we take full responsibility for that. Now, Chair, the other thing is the minister might join us. He's just been called to be on the receiving line for the President of Senegal. So he might also come and join us. Having said that, Chairperson, my name is Mataba Tamukonyam. I'm the Acting Director General for the Department of Transport. And I'll just allow the team to also introduce themselves, just so that no one goes out of here without talking.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Jeff Chue. I'm the CEO of Road Traffic Infringement Agency.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm John Mutra Singh from the Department of Transport.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Adam Masombuga, Chief Director of Legal Services of the Department of Transport.
Morning, Chair and morning, Honorable Members. My name is Thabo Tsholetsane. I'm the Chief Operations Officer of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mr. Tsholetsane.
Good morning, all. My name is Les Mishwa, PLO Western Cape Provincial Legislature.
Everybody from the department, can we then go to the parliamentary staff? Oh, let's welcome
and Good morning, Chair. I thought you already done the work, but as you commanded, I will do the same. My name is James Nzankosimthetswa. I'm a permanent delegate from KZN and also a member of this committee.
In terms of the program, honorable members will be receiving a presentation from the Department of Transport on ACTO Amendment B38D 2016. It's section 76 here. So that's why I also provinces are there, but the members will also be going to their provinces, the citizens in the program of the committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The bill, the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences Amendment Bill, seeks to amend certain provisions of the Principal Act, being the what is commonly known as the ARTO Act, and based on the implementation in two municipalities as a pilot. Based on that, we then thought that there are certain issues that we would want to improve, but also the new streamlined and simplified methodology, they be of adjudication, but also introduce a phenomenon of rehabilitation and that of appeal. It the whole spectrum. I'll just do the general background, Chairperson. The responsible person in the department is Mr. John Matasi. Works very closely with the CEO of the Road Traffic Improvement Agency, Mr. Jeff Chue, and they will be doing the presentation. But coming back to the overall purpose of the bill, Chairperson, like we have said, we approve the manner in which we serve documents to those that the infringers. Acceptability of other methods of saving infringement notices. We also rectify typos, also clarifying definitions into the bill, and taking out some of the things that are not necessarily obsolete, but impractical to then implement. And then, like I've indicated, we introduce rehabilitation programs, but then also apportion the penalties and provide for an appeals tribunal. It was approved by cabinet in March last year, and then it went through and worked with the portfolio committee for almost the entire year. At the technical level, we want to believe that we have closed a number of loopholes and the gaps. But just also to say, within the portfolio committee, it was published 3 times for public comment. So at that level of dealing specifically with the technical issue, it was substantially canvassed, and a lot of inputs were made. We responded to some of them. Some of them assisted us in terms of shaping up the new clauses. Of course, some of them were those that we considered that we could provide answers for not including them into the piece. But I wouldn't want to bore you with the background, just so that we go to the essence of the bill, which is a loss-by-loss presentation thereof. And that would be done by Mr. Matasi. He will indicate if there are errors that Mr. Jeff Chue will have to tackle. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DG, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Before I proceed with the clause-by-clause presentation on the bill, I would just like to, just for a few seconds, hand over to the CEO just to give us just a background in terms of the content of the RTIA and basically the purpose, why there is need for this amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning again, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Mr. Mutatin. Honourable Chairperson, the mandate that we carry as the Road Traffic Infringement Agency is by no means an easy one. It's one of the most difficult things in the sense that we essentially dealing with the need to change the attitudes and the behaviour of all road users, understanding the significant challenges that we face on a daily basis. Honourable members sitting here today, irrespective of whatever we do, the statistics that we're experiencing in this country shows that by the end of today, by the end of every single day, no less than 38 people lose their lives on the country's road network. 38 people. We're a country of just about 55 million citizens. About 14,000 is the average that we lose on an annual basis. And if you think about it, Honourable Chairperson, look at the statistics that I'm giving you, 38 people per day, 14,000 per annum. Over the last 8 years, we have lost a number of people that could easily fill the national soccer stadium that we have, 98,000 people. And these are people that were not sick. These are economically active people, in the main youngsters that have completed their studies at varsities, schools, and they're economically active, making a contribution towards the development of this country. We lose them unnecessarily. That automatically impacts on the negative development that this country is going to be able to have. The financial implications of that comes to more than 200 billion rand every single year. And this is a strategic intervention that we're seeking to make. When the bill was passed way back in 1998, it was well considered. We have, within the department and the formation within the ministry, people that are highly competent, that have institutional memory, and we're also very excited that we still have the leaders that broke the first ground. One of them is here, Dr. Mbanjo, that is sitting here with us, with the special advisor to the minister. He was there in the initial stages when the concept of coming up with the ARDO was envisaged. We sought to implement it on a pilot phase, understanding the complexities and the interactive nature of the system itself. And we wanted to implement it on a pilot phase, which we did, in the municipality of Tshwane and Johannesburg, with a specific need to test the system, the applicable processes, the impact that it would have on the issuing authorities, as well as being afforded the opportunity to identify any attended weaknesses, deficiencies, and be given an opportunity to come up with the related catalyst interventions to sort out, so that by the time that we embark on a national rollout, we would have a highly efficient system. And this is what we have done. The Act has been there. We are presenting, through the leadership of the department, the amendment bill. And all the clauses that have been identified in the amendment bill have been formed by the experiences that we have had during the implementation of the pilot. And we also wanted to take advantage of the highly developed scientific innovations that we have. And everything else that we're presenting has been interactively and highly engaged upon by the people that have been affected by the system, that have been implementing it, and those that have got a specific interest in the efficient implementation thereof. And we've taken in all their comments and the lessons that have been learned that are now the result of what is it that we are presenting in this respect. We remain fully committed under the leadership of the department and supported by all our strategic stakeholders to ensure that by the time that we set out on a national rollout that has been envisaged in the upcoming year 2018, we could do so with the power of the lessons that have been learned. There were three main categories of what had been identified as key interventions and weaknesses that were intended to. One was issues related to operational challenges, which we ultimately were able to sort out. The second part was in respect of the systems, the interfaces with the National Contravention Register to ensure that all the information that is required can be available at the tip of the fingertips. The last part was the legislative deficiencies that we've had. Understanding also that this was an act that was passed a long time ago, there were other related legislative developments that have come into being, such as the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, Promotion of Access to Information, the National Credit Act, all those acts that we needed to take into consideration to see what impact that it has on the current implementation, and thus enable the implementation when we embark on it to be as efficient as possible. So we do humbly welcome this, and we truly are grateful for the opportunity to be able to address this August committee. We thank you for the opportunity, the chairperson.
Thank Mr. Chue, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Without repeating what was said by my DG and Mr. Chue, I would just like to go straight to the clause-by-clause presentation of the bill, because Mr. Chue and the DG has alluded to the fact of why the need for us to go into this amendment after that pilot project that we have done, and wherein certain deficiencies or problems were identified when we tried to roll out ARDO. if we go to page 6 of your presentation, the handout, clause by clause discussion, we are clause 1, whereby the intention, therefore, is to amend section 2, which I'm not sure whether would we want, because it's not visible there, so maybe the light should be switched off or...
Let's use our
hard
copy.
Oh, okay. No, thank you, Chair.
All
right. Amend section 1 of the Act by adding and deleting and substituting certain definitions of in the Principal Act. Clause 2, amend section 4 of the Act, which provides for the object and functioning of the authority in terms of additional functions that were or are allocated to the authority in this instance, the authority being the RCIA, which one of the amendments is then to rephrase or to rename the agency as the authority responsible for the administrative adjudication of road traffic offences. Clause 2 mainly deals with delete subsection 2E.
Can you check if we have the same document?
I think the other thing is that it would be easier if you also have the principal head so that you are able to take this amendment against the principal head. Not just the amendment. I know we've got the amendment, the draft amendment here. You also have the principal head, at least 1998. So that you are able to see where this thing is. You can leave now the amendment here. Just look at the presentation as well as the principal act. Because the presentation is a summary of the amendment. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 2 mainly deletes subsection 2E of section 4 of the Act, which deals with the issuing by the registrar of warrants against infringers who have failed to comply with an enforcement order made in terms of the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences Act, and the rest of the amendments are as a result of those amendments. Those are consequential amendments that need to be effected as a result of those amendments. The deletion of this subsection is aligned with the proposed repeal of Clause 11 of the Bill of Section 21 of the Act, which deals with the issuing of warrants by the registrar. The clause also deletes subsection 44A and C, which deals with the prosecution of offenses in criminal trials. Clause 3 amends Section 11 of the Act, which provides for the administrative staff and the appropriate remunerations of the staff of the authority, in this case, the Road Traffic Infringement Agency. The clause removes the requirement that the minister, in consultation with the Minister of Finance in respect of the approval of pensions and benefits determined by the board of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency. Clause 4 repeals Section 12 of the Act, which provides for the apportionment for the appointment of sheriffs, and Clause 5 of the Bill amends Section 13 of the Principal Act, which provides for the financing of the authority by inserting a new paragraph in Section 13 of the Act to provide that finances of the authority are also derived from the penalties issued and collected by or on behalf of the issuing authority. The Act defines the issuing authority as local authority, a provincial administration, or the Road Traffic Management Corporation established under Section 4 of the RTMC Act, and the bill as any other state institution declared by the minister by regulation as an issuing authority. Clause 6 of the bill amends Section 15 of the Act, which provides for the banking account of the authority. Clause 6 provides that the authority may open and maintain one or more bank accounts with the approval of the board of the authority. Currently, in terms of the principal act, that authority was given to the Director General. So operationally it makes business sense to say that the board of the RTIA should be the one that are responsible for the management and opening of the bank accounts. Clause 7 of the Bill Amendment, Section 17 of the Act, which provides for the issuance of infringement notices and ascertainment of demerit points position that the person has accrued, amongst others. Clause 7 amends Section 17.1e to indicate that the demerit points position may be ascertained in the prescribed manner. Furthermore, Clause 7 deletes subsection 17.1f, 4, which deals with the election to be tried in court. The option to elect to be tried in court is substituted by the new insertion of the transport, the appeal tribunal, whereby we're trying to, because the intention, therefore, is to remove the adjudication of road traffic offenses from the current blocked court roles. We want this matter to be referred to the tribunals to be the one that deals with any disagreement or any problems that an alleged infringer may have. So 7 also amends Section 17.5 to provide that the owner or operator of a motor vehicle who permits any person to drive such vehicle or otherwise to exercise any control over such vehicle without having ascertained the full names, identity documents, residential address, postal, and where applicable, business and email address of an infringer, such person is liable for the prescribed infringement that may be committed or that may be committed as against that particular motor vehicle. Clause 8 of the Bill Amendment, Section 18 of the Act, which makes provisions for the right of an infringer to make a representation to a representation officer. The amendment provides that an infringer who has been served with an infringement notice alleging that he or she has committed an infringement may make a representation in the prescribed manner with respect to that notice and the infringement to the responsible authority in this instance. If the representation are rejected, the infringer may no longer elect to be tried in court but has a right to appeal the decision of the representation officer to the tribunal to relook at the merits of his representation. Clause 8 also provides that if a representation is successful as a result of the prescribed procedure not being complied with, the infringement notice, courtesy letters, or enforcement order may be reserved. Clause 9 of the Bill Amendment, Section 19B of the Act, which provides for a payment of fines imposed for road traffic infringement. If an infringer makes insufficient payment to the authority in terms of this Act in respect of a fine, the check used for a non-payment is dishonored. A notice as prescribed must be served on the infringer, informing that particular infringer that that payment or that check was dishonored, which will lead to an enforcement order instead of a warrant being issued against him or her. If an infringer fails to comply with the arrangement in terms of the notice to pay by installment, for instance, this will lead to an enforcement order for the full amount. Clause 10 of the Bill Amendment, Section 20 of the Act, by deleting subsection 3B of Section 20, which provides for enforcement order issued by the registrar in respect of failure to pay fine imposed for road traffic infringement. Section 23B stipulates that an enforcement order must state that a failure to comply with the requirement of an enforcement order not later than 32 days after the date of service of the order will result in a warrant being issued to recover the applicable penalty and fees due to the issuing authority. Therefore, the deletion of this paragraph is in line with the repeal, as I indicated, of Clause 21 of the Act, which deals with issuing of warrants by the registrar. The clause also adds a new section, 25B capital A, which deals with the prohibition of issuing of a permit or a license in terms of any road traffic legislation or transport legislation if an enforcement order has been issued against a transgressor of road traffic related legislation. Clause 11 of the bill repeals Section 21 of the Act, Section 21, which empowers the registrar to issue a warrant against an infringer who fails to comply with an enforcement order which requires him or her to pay the penalty and fees that are due to the issuing authority. The proposed repeal means that the consequence of the failure to comply with an enforcement order will be dealt with in terms of Section 25 of the Act, which section provides that an infringer who does not comply with an enforcement order may not be issued with one of the following documents: a driving license, a professional driving permit, or a license disc in respect of a motor vehicle registered in that infringer's name until such enforcement order has been adequately complied with or revoked by the provisions of the Act. In respect of an infringement notice, Section 19.2c of the Act provides that an infringer who fails to comply with an infringement notice, the authority must issue a courtesy letter and serve it on the infringer, stating that a failure to comply with the requirements of the courtesy letter within the time permitted will result in the registrar issuing an enforcement order in terms of Section 20 of the Principal Act. Clause 12 of the bill repeals Section 22 of the Act, which provides for the procedure in respect of a trial of an infringer who does not pay the penalty but elects to be tried in court. This proposal is in line with the repeal of the provision dealing with the election to be tried in court, whereby the insertion of the appeals tribunal will take effect. Clause 13 amends Section 25 of the Act, which provides for the disqualification of an infringer from driving or operating a motor vehicle after an infringer has exceeded their prescribed threshold of the demerit points that that person has incurred. The amendment also introduces the concept of operator or a juristic person who is not an operator or a learner's driver in respect of categories of infringement that may incur demerit points in terms of the Act. Because if you recall that in most instances the driver is not responsible for certain offenses that may be ascribed to the vehicle in itself, those offenses may be ascribed to the operator, being the registered owner of that particular motor vehicle. Therefore, in terms of these provisions, we are saying it's not only the driver's responsibility, but also of the operator of that particular motor vehicle that must be held accountable for certain transgressions of the road traffic-related legislation. Clause 13 also amends Section 25 straight to indicate that operator or a juristic person who is not an operator must immediately hand in his or her motor vehicle license disc, operator card, or any other permit or license issued in terms of road traffic-related legislation or transport legislation where applicable during that period where the operator has accrued the maximum demerit points that says that that operator is not entitled to be the holder of an operator card or is not allowed to renew the license disc of that particular motor vehicle. Clause 15 primarily introduces a new chapter for capital A in the Act, provides for the establishment of the appeals tribunal, which main function is to hear appeals and review and adjudicate on any matter brought to it by an infringer aggrieved by the decision of a representation officer in relation to a representation that that particular infringer would have made. This instance whereby one submitted a representation, the representation officer then discard or denies that representation, the infringer is entitled then to approach the tribunal rather than going or electing to go to court to approach the tribunal to relook or review the decision of the representation officer. clause 18 of the bill substitute the whole section of 32 of the Act, which provides for the apportionment of penalties. The new substitution provides that any penalty received by the authority in terms of the Act must, as prescribed, after the deduction of an amount equal to the discount, be paid over to the issuing authority. Any prescribed fees or monies collected by or on behalf of the issuing authority in terms of the Act must as prescribed, also be paid to the responsible authority. In this instance, we're trying to streamline monies received by either the authority being the RTIA, and also that monies received by issuing authorities in terms of ensuring that monies due to a particular authority becomes or is payable when that amount becomes due. Clause 19 of the Bill Amendment Section 34 of the Act, which deals with the power of the Minister to make regulation. Clause 19 adds a new paragraph in Section 34 of the Principal Act and gives the Minister the powers to make regulation on the manner in which an infringement notice, a courtesy letter, or enforcement order may be reissued. This will allow an instance whereby, for instance, if you find that an infringer was issued with a notice of an infringement wrongly, or alternatively, that person cannot be found, it allows the authority to be able to reissue that particular infringement without that infringement being deemed to be invalid because it may have exceeded the prescribed time frame whereby an infringement notice should be issued in terms of the RTIA Act. Clause 20 of the Bill Amendment Section 35 of the Act, which deals with the transitional provisions, provides that the notice issued in terms of Section 56 or 341 of the Criminal Procedure Act before that date of commencement of Section 17 may be continued and finalized under the Criminal Procedure Act, but the said notice may not be issued after the commencement date in respect of an infringement, thus removing the reference to an offense. Section 17 of the Act provides for the issuing of an infringement notice by an authorized officer of a person duly authorized by an issuing authority. This is in line with streamlining the adjudication process whereby you have a process where a notice was issued in terms of the CPA. It needs to be finalized irrespective of whether the ARTO Act at that particular time is in force. But that one needs to be finalized in terms of the CPA. 21 of the bill generally provides for the substitution of certain expressions. In effect, the name RTIA is replaced by the Road Traffic Infringement Authority. The expression major infringement is therefore replaced by infringement throughout the Act. The expression National Contravention Register is replaced with the National Road Traffic Offenses Register. Clause 22 of the bill provides for the short title and commencement of the Act. As the DG has already indicated, the proposed amendment went through the entire parliamentary process in terms of consultation. It went through vigorous consultation whereby a number of stakeholders were consulted in terms of the ARTO Act in itself, more especially those that would be affected by the provisions of the RTIA Act. Because you look at those ones that may be affected. In this instance, your taxi operators, your bus operators, who basically are always on the public road, and they may incur certain demerit points much quicker than your ordinary driver or motor vehicle, were consulted to a certain extent, and there were consensus in terms of the rationale of why the need for us to be stringent with regards to disobedience of road traffic related offenses, and looking at the purpose of the entire act with regards to changing the attitude of drivers with regards to law enforcement and be long-abiding citizens of the country. As the registrar has alluded to, one of the things that faces us as a country is the number of fatalities that we have on our road. And this is basically as a result of the attitude of drivers with regards to compliance with road traffic laws. Basically, it says that if the law says you should not drink and drive, you should not exceed the prescribed speed limit, it's therefore an expectation that each and every driver in the Republic is supposed to be compliant, and if one is compliant with those laws, there is no need that that person would incur certain demerit points which may result in that particular person having his or her driving license being cancelled. The same with operators. If an operator of a particular fleet of motor vehicles ensures that their motor vehicles are roadworthy, there is no point that that particular operator will incur demerit points that would result in their operator card being cancelled. So the intention is not basically to punish everyone in relation to road traffic related legislation or offenses. The intention is to ensure that those processes are streamlined, that we become law-abiding citizens, that we obey laws that are there that should be obeyed. It's not that we want to be punitive to the drivers of the country, but we are trying to ensure that we achieve the targets that we set ourselves with regards to halving the number of fatalities that we have on our road. There are strategies that, in addition to this one, that we have implemented as a Department of Transport, and obviously there will be other strategies that we'll continuously implement with regards to us ensuring that we halve the number of fatalities that we have on our road. And as the registrar and the DG has alluded to, we therefore request the committee to look at the proposal and humbly request the endorsement of the committee with regards to our proposal. I thank you. I would like to hand over to the DG and the registrar to proceed further on.
Thank you, Chair. That is our proposals in terms of the amendments, and we are therefore in a favorable hand to deal with any questions that might come our way for clarity.
Thank you very much, BG and the team, for the presentation on the bill, amendment bill. I'm going to now allow members to ask questions for clarity. But I think it would have also been good if we could, hear about the challenges and the efficiencies that were faced before, so that we satisfy ourselves that after amending this bill, we won't be facing similar challenges and efficiencies in future. So it would be even in writing, it may not necessarily be now. Just give us a background as to why this amendment. I know you touched in the first slide that you tried this in Gauteng, Johannesburg, and so forth. But there were challenges and also some inefficiencies. And you are of the view that the amendments that you're making are going to address those. But it will be good for members here and also in provinces to know what were those challenges. So that you don't come again and say you need more amendments because the amendment piece or act has not been able to address those challenges and efficiency. So I want just to ask you to do that. You may not necessarily respond to this now, But if you can provide us with that, so that also when there are these processes in provinces, public hearings, the deliberations, members at that level are also aware of these challenges. Yeah. The second one I wanted to check before I allow members, this threshold on the demerit point. I've been checking on the Principal Act. I couldn't find anything there. There has been a talk some years ago, there talk about 12 points and all that stuff, but then there was a lot of, I know there were a lot of objections to the act and to the bill. So that's why he decided to drop it for some time, and that now you're resuscitating it again. But just hold on those responses so that allow members to ask questions. All members are allowed, permanent delegates and special delegates are allowed to ask questions. I'll take hands, Honorable Faber.
You're not saying that the refugees report was a problem?
Well, they respond. But I said they would have to do that in writing, because I don't think it should be just a one-line comment, but just details of each of the municipalities where the pilot was rolled out. I don't think it's, I mean, we need details with regard to this issue. But perhaps let's allow, since the DG is ready.
No, Chair, not necessarily that we are fully ready. But we concur, we can provide a briefing document in terms of the challenges. But I'm sure if we deal with the questions, we'll also send some pointers, just so that we don't leave this meeting with an impression that we are not addressing the challenges. So we will definitely give some pointers, but we will also, we can also make that available in writing. To assist the members as they go out to the provinces. So it shouldn't be a problem.
That will really assist. So that also, as you indicate, that each of these clauses, how is it going to address the challenges? Yeah. But also the institutional arrangement. Why change from agency to authority? Yeah. Honorable Faber, Honorable, for the CA, Honorable Makwebu, Honorable Nkede, Honorable Siri. Yeah, we will have a second round. So can you start with Honorable Faber?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I'm actually glad that we only have the presentation now. It gave us a lot of time to actually go through the bill itself. And you must please bear with me. I'm going to touch a lot of questions because I really do believe that this is a very important bill. Now, in general, I'm not convinced that R2 in this final draft will effectively change the bad road behavior issued around the design of a demerit folk on the demerit on as a focus point, because it's only on the negative. Now, my problem first starts coming in how to adjudicate so many on the demerit system. If you look at the metros itself at the moment, it's almost 1 million fines per month, if you take them together. I've just the sums on that. Now, RTM system, I think, is flawed, and because I think we don't have the capacity, to be quite honest, and I think we must be honest with ourselves. As Honorable Pai was saying, we mustn't go into something because we will see it fail. We must present something that we will know that will work and save lives. I think this is the point that we should start off from. And you know, it starts all with local governments where it's going to start. Now, I don't know how Salga was involved in this, because I'll tell you, we must start with a pilot project. And I'm going to start off with that. There were so many defects in this pilot act that more pages was added subsequently to the pilot project that was originally contained. In retrospect, it should have been a redraft rather than an amendment on the act. because if you looked at all these amendments, this should have been a new bill that should have been presented to us, not amendments. An amendment to an act is easy to amend a few things, and I think we must also agree upon that, that we believe this should have been a brand new act. The problem to me on the pilot project, and this you have to answer us on this, if you look at clause 7, and if we look at that, it pointers to implement a project, pilot project, without including the most important component of ARTIS, namely the demerit point system. Demerit point system was never included in the pilot project. And this is the most important thing, and you did not use that. So how can you say a pilot project worked or didn't work if you didn't even use the demerit point system? So both the pilot projects, in fact, were absolutely toothless and therefore, to me, totally pointless. I think we knew the road traffic infringement system that actually do work. And I believe we need the minister actually to go back on a road infringement system to introduce to us something that we can be satisfied with. So I'll first stop with that and I'll go to the next one. Also, if you... Excuse me, as I said, you must please bear with me. I've got a lot of questions, and I know I'll maybe have a second bite at it. But on the financial implications, according to what I've read, was there's no financial implications. But there's a lot of financial implications. It would mean operating operational equipment, stationary training of staff and personnel, etc. And if you look at that, the technical issues. That's one side, because I'm busy with a lot of things here. Okay, let me go to this quickly as well. On clause 13, page 17, in addition to the economic implications, because we're looking at operators, so this means that if a person gets fined, now that the operator has to take responsibility, in addition to the economic implications of vehicle hire or freight companies, are negatives, as they would be adversely affected, creating the possibility of them actually suddenly shutting down as a business, because they have to take the responsibility. If you take municipalities, for instance, just for the sake, there can be 10 persons driving one vehicle, for instance. Then the other thing is, did we think about how the municipalities would be affected financially with a fine? Because this is, in some municipalities, as we see it, a main source of income to municipalities. I was talking about the capacity. I think this to me is the big thing. Then, if you were looking, as I was saying to you, just in the metros we had like almost a million, if you take out in the peak season, almost a million fines. If you look at the demerit system, how will a tribunal to do the demerit work with, if you take half of that, which is 500,000 people, to work through them in a tribunal? It is impossible. We just don't have the capacity for that. And I think we must be honest with it, because we're going to sit here again, Chairperson, and just say, we must not implement something if we already now know on the figures that can't work. I don't want to take all the questions away from people, yes, so on all the other members. I'm going to quickly go through this. I just got the last slide, which I want to say. Give me a second. That one I will leave to one of our colleagues. Sorry, Chairperson, just please.
Okay, you come back later. Let's take the other hand in the meantime. While you go through your notes. But the next one, sorry, I keep on forgetting your name. Can we ask the questions for clarity? In terms of the processes that we'll be embarking on, we still going to deliberate on the amendment. For now, let's pose questions for clarity. Even if we have a statement in our notes, let's try and rephrase them in the form of questions for clarity, because we still have that, going to have opportunity to deliberate on this amendment. I just want to caution members. Honorable Jesus.
Can you please speak on off the mic?
Sorry, Chief. Thanks, Chair. Some of my questions have been, my points have been mentioned. Can I just go to section 13, just on a technical point?
Section 13 or clause
13? Sorry, clause 13, yeah, page 7. In the presentation we heard, if you look at C, the period, yeah, that's in, within a period of 32 days handed any driving license. The presentation said immediately, I see that has been removed, so that's just for clarity. Some of the sections were skipped, which is not the end of the world, but I think one of the important ones which we didn't deal with is section 16. And this is a question which I think bothers a lot of people, and I think we'd like clarity on this. When we say electronic services or communication, what exactly do we mean? Do we mean I can send an SMS to somebody and that's regarded as a legitimate electronic communication? Does it have to be an email? How many people have access to electronic communication? Are we certain that a big majority of the population has access to that? We all know what the mail service is doing and not doing. So I think this is a very grey area. I think we really need to examine that in great detail. Those are the things that struck me, and as I say, some of my points have in fact been mentioned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, the Road Traffic Act has penalties and it raises certain conduct as a criminal offense. So criminal matters are judged and adjudicated by our courts as a convention. And our legal system, there are two legal systems in the world. Inquisitorial system and accusatorial system. South African legal system or criminal justice system is accusatorial by its own nature for all the good intents and purposes, because when one is accused, he's presumed innocent until proven guilty. That's the principle of the law, principle of legality. Now, if you look at what we seek to do, I would caution that criminal matters, it's best that we leave them in the courts. Even if we are thinking the demerit system with all good intents and purposes still, but the adjudication of those, if you charge me or I have an infringement from the agency, then if I am not happy with that, I must be allowed to go to court. Now, you are putting the middleman here. You are saying now I can make representations, I can go I can appeal if my representations are turned down to the appeals tribunal. Let's pause on that. Let me show you the problem I have with that. Our courts are already doing that for us. If you want to make representations, you go to the prosecutor and make representations. There is a senior public prosecutor. I know this. I was the prosecutor myself. You make those representations. They are trying to address these matters. They've got specialized prosecutors who went through the ranks who are running our traffic courts. And these are men and women who are legally trained. Now, I'm going to show you where you're going to stumble in this matter. Now, let me pause, Chairperson, on that issue, but as I'm saying, leave the criminal matters to our legal system. If we have to beef up our legal system because you want to introduce the demerit system, that's fine, but let the adjudication thereof be left in the capable hands of our courts. Because you're going to struggle with capacity. How are you going to draw prosecutorial staff to assist you to adjudicate this matter? Because you need men and women who are legally qualified to look at the merits of the representations made. And when those issues are turned down, they must go to the appeals tribunal. You still need men and women. You're going to succeed. Let me give an example. Again, in my previous life, with all good intents and purposes, social development tried this process. They've got staff, that is very thin. They are not succeeding. They've got an appeal tribunal. If your social grant is turned down, you can appeal. Make an appeal. They've got an appeal. Terms of the Social Assistance Act. But guess what? They don't have the capacity. They are suffering from litigation after litigation. And instead, they're spending, you know, a lot of money fighting the, you know, dealing with litigation. So don't go to that space. You know, it sounds good on paper, but practically you're going to stumble. You won't have the resources because you will be sitting with the problem that has been created by SAFA. Let's go to the courts. I mean, to another level, quickly, Chairperson. These employees will be manning your tribunals and will be dealing with the representations of minor infringements. In terms of your amendments, they remain the employees of the department, and they report therefore to the authority. Again, you see, our legal system is very nice because it espouses principles of independence and impartiality. These people will be sitting depending on you on their PMTS and progression, so it compromises the issue of independence and impartiality. Because in our courts, prosecutors report to the NDPP, despite that they're getting the budget from the minister, precisely want to protect the integrity of their work and their decisions. Now, you'll be having these, I guess, quote-unquote, and inverted commas, prosecutors doing your representations, you know, analysis and adjudicating, goes to the tribunal if I'm not happy. But those people remain your employees. They report to the teacher. I don't buy their independence and impartiality. Leave these matters to the courts, because our courts are doing a sterling job. And therefore, if you agree in principle that the demerit system has been introduced in this country because of the carnage, maybe that's the debate. But the how part of it, it must not be left in your hands. In terms of the principal act, this matter has been criminalized. These issues are dealt in their court. I can have my day in court if I have a traffic violation or an infringement. I can go and appear in court and deal with that matter. Leave it to the court. Our courts are very strong. They are capable. This issue of the tribunals and the appeals authority, with due respect, Chairperson, I want to caution, it's not going to work in this country. We have a problem. Even the courts, they would want more prosecutors. Where are you going to draw them? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think we're going to have a combination. I tried. We're going to have a combination of maybe if we go on with the processes, we'll be reducing the amount of deliberation.
Just as to the issue of the pilot you have addressed, the program of rehabilitation, I don't hear it well in terms of what has been said. If that can be highlighted, would the rehabilitation link to penalties and taking away the licenses and the like? Could we have a different way of rehabilitation? Maybe just a clarity. The issue of the banking, I'm not sure, Chair. Some of us are novice on this issue. The issue of opening many accounts for the authority. Yes, that's clarity on that. There's a clause 13. Clause 13 talks about even taking out the disc of your car. So you make the car not to be operating. That's no more a person that has contravened. It now goes to the next level, which is, it deals with, let's say it's a family car, it deals with the whole family. Am I having the same understanding? And what could be the reason? I think the issue of the appeal tribunal myself, I was just worried about how is it going to operate. I mean, we have courts across the country. Is it going to be the same? And I think the issue of the capacity. Thank you.
Unlike Honorable Magwebu, I limit myself to clarity seeking. The The presenter started by saying the emphasis is on changing behavior and attitude. And my clarity seeking is, we've had a piece of legislation before. Are we adequately persuaded that this piece of legislation would address the issue of behavior and attitude? The slide 10, I'm going to limit myself, Chair, to the slide presentation. Slide 10, what are the prospects of implementation? Slide 14, bullet point number 2, have we checked the prospects of civil disobedience? Slide 19, bullet point 2, it says that the tribunal will be appointed by the president. I want to assume that it is going to be nationally positioned. So if you are like me, you are from the most rural part in Taung, in the northwest. We want to be like you, Chair, and have proper infrastructure, good cars to transport our kids. But scholar transport in our village, you know. Yeah, not you. I should have started with a disclaimer. Honorable Magwebu and me share the same thing. We are from the most peripheral part of this country. We want to have good scholar transport, but we are still using vans because it's also subsistence for those who are living in our own communities, but it's also assisting those who are in greater need. So if it's going to be national, according to my assumption, so if you remove my disc, like Che was saying, then by assumption, the car is no longer roadworthy. So I must now appeal where? I must move from Taung to go and appeal in a national office. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've decided to allow some of the deliberation because some of them are very interesting. The point that are raised by Honorable Malcolm, particularly on chip. I'm just thinking that there are other institutions that also have this, competitive commission as one. I wonder how they deal with that. Are they preventing people then from accessing courts? I think Honorable Makuwek, I think the National Credit Regulator is also going to ask me. So I was just thinking how whether they prevent Indian people from accessing courts. But I allow the department for now to respond to the question, and then we'll have a second round.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. For obvious reasons, I'll take the easy one, and the police will deal with the more difficult one. Chair, going back to the chair's question earlier on, Chair, we can all work and produce this piece of legislation and think that we've covered everything. But when we go and implement, there will always be those issues that we then want to improve. Even policies are like that. That's why they get reviewed from time to time. So, Chair, it will be very difficult to come here and then say to you, we have covered everything, we will not come back to you soon. I think that is just fair. We endeavor every time to cover almost all the areas. Now, that was just answering the chair earlier on to say, won't you come back again next year? Probably not next year. We will try not to burden you with dealing with the amendment of the same legislation time and time again. But we cannot necessarily guarantee because we always improve. When we did the Principal Act, there's issues around the fourth industrial revolution. We're not in full swing, the digital world was not necessarily in full swing like it is now. Hence the issues of acceptability of emails and related issues. as part of the electronic communication. But also, Chair, I think we also confine ourselves to we're more than happy to clarify even some of the aspects in the Principal Act. But I thought that we need to confine ourselves to the amendment that we are trying to introduce. And that is why, Chair, we may not necessarily have a view on the assertion that we should have just overhauled the whole Act. We believe that we are on the right track. There was also an issue and a question around you would punish state operators and then everything will come to a standstill and the municipalities will lose revenue and related issues. Chair, I don't think that the intention is to affect the economy negatively, but I think the issue here is to make our roads safer. And if those freight operators break the law, they have to face consequences, unfortunately. There's also the issue of taking away the discs. We take discs every day. In terms of the NRCA, we are allowed to take the discs if we believe that the vehicle should not proceed. If the vehicle is just so unsafe and unroadworthy, can you imagine if we leave it and allow it to proceed and 5 kilometers down the road, it kills people. So we are allowed to take away the disc and discontinue the vehicle, even if it is full of families or children. No, we don't want them 5 kilometers down the line to be involved in an accident and we lose those lives in the same vehicle that we would have allowed to proceed if it is unsafe. So I think we need to just be very clear around that. Where the circumstances necessitate that we need to discontinue the vehicle from proceeding, we normally do that. But I think we also allow the vehicle to be taken to a repair center and it be repaired and then go for testing again and come back onto the road. We don't necessarily demobilize that for the sake of demobilizing. The last one I want, The issue, I think the most simplest clause was just the issue around banking details. There was a tedious process of having to have banking details and changing of banks and all of and signatories to have to go through the CG of the department. So just simplifying that to say if there's an entity with the board, that function should just go to the board. I think the issue around banking details was trying to deal with that part. Now the main question, which I think we was addressed, always addressed, the issue of administrative action and administrative adjudication. Like you have said, Chair, it happens everywhere. There is space for administrative adjudication. In fact, on the contrary, other than flogging the court, we're relieving pressure from the court. The intention is to relieve the pressure from the court, and that is why we then make certain offenses, the ones that we've categorized in terms of the ARTO Act, to be falling under to be subjected to administrative adjudication. That by no means prevents the aggrieved person to go to the court still for final adjudication. So the courts are the final arbiters on all matters, whether administrative, judicial, quasi-judicial, and related issues. And we've just given an example about the competition commissions and the regulators, including commissions of inquiries. They're subject to those kind of of a processes. But I think the positive about this is that we were removing those small offenses where you can pay a fine of 50 rand out of the court system, because it was the court system that was not coping with the millions of those smaller fines where you can actually pay and go on with your life. So it should be understood in that context. There are these major offenses that are not part of the ARTO Act, and they still go straight to court. Thanks, Chairperson. I think the team can deal with the other technical issues.
Thanks, DG, Chair. I think as the DG has alluded to, the it must be understood that the intention is not to be punitive. The intention is to change the driver behavior. We have tried previously using the current prosecution system. As the DG has already said, they got clocked. Road traffic related transgressions or violations were deemed to be minor transgressions or offenses. In most instances, you may find that some of them, because of the period that they take to be on the roll, they were somehow got struck off the roll. Nothing happens to those criminal or those offenses. So basically the intention or at the conceptualization of the ARTO Act was basically to try and address some of these deficiencies that exist between our justice system and basically road traffic related offenses, because you needed something which is focused on what was facing you at that particular time. If you look at how the justice system or the courts dealt with road traffic related violations, somebody that obviously was supposed to be sentenced to prison, some of those people would get suspended sentence and they continue then to transgress and they create or they kill or maim a number of people. So the intention is to have this administrative adjudication process to target and deal specifically with road traffic related violations. And it's not that, as I indicated, to try and be punitive, but to try and change that attitude that drivers have. Because if I get into a vehicle and I obey road traffic related laws, there's no way that I'll accumulate demerit points. Obviously, I would be a law-abiding driver, and I won't accrue any points, and I won't suffer the implication of the demerit points or the administrative adjudication of road traffic offences process just by becoming a law-abiding citizen. That's the expectation, and basically to try and instill that responsibilities on all drivers, both being the driver and being the operator, that there is that responsibility bestowed on you as the owner or registered owner of a motor vehicle to ensure that you operate a roadworthy motor vehicle on a public road. Thanks, but I'll hand over to the registrar to respond to some of the questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I would like to start by the question for clarification that the Honourable Member had asked about our conviction that the end result of this will lead to a change in behaviour. Indeed, we certainly hope so, and to the extent that is possible, do have that kind of assurance. Within the plethora of interventions that the department is presenting, Honourable Member, this is only going to be one of them that would make a positive impact towards changing the behavior of road users, making them understand the responsibilities that they carry whenever they set out to enjoy the benefits of the road infrastructure network. We are not saying this is the panacea, that everything else is going to be sorted with the passage of this bill. But we're saying it is one of the catalyst key interventions that will make a positive contribution there too. The Honourable Member from the beginning, if I may just try to deal with some of the other issues chronologically as they've been raised, about that the bill should have been a complete redraft instead of presenting an amendment. It may just be a technical argument that we may enter into. We're looking at it in terms of the end result, what is it that we're expecting? That the bill that has been presented, be it called a complete redraft, be it called an amendment, the intention is to be able to come up with a system that in the ultimate end would be efficient in operation. And this is what we have sought to be able to do. And there's been quite a lot of challenges. We have to accept that not everybody else has been 100% supportive. There's been tremendous criticism that we acknowledge. And in fact, we are very appreciative of the criticism that people come with because that gives us the opportunity to also do introspection and ascertain for ourselves that we're still on the right track in terms of the interventions that we are proposing. The Honourable Member has also indicated that the demerit point system has not been included. That is not true. The demerit point system was included in the pilot. There is a big difference. The difference is they were not made applicable. We do have the statistics that was meant to show if the demerit point system was applicable, this would have been the end result. And we had used this as an educational tool. We had to accept from a constitutional imperative that it has to be a law of general application that would be punitive towards everybody else. That's why we said the demerit points, in as much as we can know that the commission of this particular infringement will attract so many demerit points. We are, however, not levying it against one's record because we don't want those people that would have been caught on the roadside during the pilot implementation to be negatively affected. They would be disadvantaged in comparison to those within the rest of the country. So we have done an analysis of the statistical impact of what we would have. So we have not implemented that demerit system from that point of view. For analytical purposes, we do have that record that we have. So in our conviction, the pilot was not pointless. The strategic intervention and the intent from the beginning was when we came up with the pilot, as I've indicated, those three key objectives: implement the system so that you get to identify the attendant challenges and deficiencies and be afforded the opportunity to come up with the related interventions, so that when you set on national rollout, you would have a better system that would easily be implemented in that respect. The DG, Honorable Chairperson, has indicated that the primary focus that we had here today was to concentrate on the amendment bill. However, these interventions that we're making are objective. They are supported by empirical evidence of the lessons that we have learned during the pilot in itself, because it would make no sense to thumbsuck what we think are proposed solutions that were not backed up by empirical evidence. So it's the lessons that have been learned during the pilot implementation. And as we've been implementing it, there's a lot of other interventions that were required that were within the scope and ambit of responsibility of the department and the RTIA that had been implemented. So it has been an ongoing process that we had done. We had also considered, Honorable Member, the financial implications in respect of it. The unfortunate thing in the discourse when you engage on ARTO, people want to look at law enforcement as a revenue generation scheme. That is not how it is. For us, the focus and the interest is always about road safety, to be able to come up with those catalyst interventions that will make sure that in the ultimate end, what is it that we are providing as a service to ordinary citizens? And that is to ensure that anybody that sets out on a journey can have a semblance of assurance that they can depart from point A and safely arrive at point B. It's about road safety. Yes, indeed, any kind of action that we undertake has got to be seriously considered in terms of exercising our financial responsibilities. And we had consequently looked into that. In the main, we have also made a comparison in terms of what the issuing authorities have been able to generate and what the attendant expenditure is in terms of supporting the ARTO process. A lot of it shows tremendous positive impact in terms of the revenue that has been generated, in as much as our predisposition is not about income generation. However, our record will show how much money has been generated in that and that has been distributed to all the issuing authorities. However, the preeminent focus is all about road safety in that. Yes, indeed, one has got to be able to recognize that financial implications would be there. The main difference is the issuing authorities do incur expenditure in the current system when they implement law enforcement interventions, when they've got to be able to undertake those law enforcement activities. It is not that when they implement AVSO, all of a sudden those financial implications have got to disappear. They still carry those financial responsibilities. They are the issuing authorities, and they would have to continue performing the duties related to the issuing of the infringements in this respect. So, Chairperson, we can provide all the other related actions. As you have requested, we will then provide in writing a response to all the other issues that members are able to raise, so that you have the same assurance as we have in this respect. The issue that comes out to operators and the possibilities of them being shut down, we have dealt with that, and it's one of the significant issues that had been informed by the pilot intervention. Initially in the regulations, we had a section that dealt with the complete shutdown in respect of the number of demerit points that could have been incurred based on the number of vehicles within a particular fleet. We have had tremendous engagement with the vehicle operators, including the vehicle rental companies. However, the standpoint that has always been undertaken is if a country passes a particular law, everybody in that country has got a duty to be able to comply with it. We recognize that one of the challenges was a lot of the fleet operators have got their own head offices in other countries elsewhere, and they cannot in that respect want to superimpose whatever their business systems and operations are like that have been determined in other countries than South Africa. And all that we have said is if South Africa passes an act, everybody else has got to be able to comply with that. And therefore, the interrelated systems that are required is the one that would inform the kind of business that we had. Yes, if, for example, coming from Johannesburg, as we flew into Cape Town, we would be able to rent vehicles. It's the responsibility of Avis or Budget or any vehicle rental company to always act responsibly. And by being responsible, they have to know that on such a day, Jeff Chua is the one that rented our vehicle, and they must keep a record of it. They cannot come and cry foul and say their responsibilities are too onerous on them to comply. Because when an infringement is detected on the basis of that vehicle, we would go and say, the record shows, Avis, you are the owner of this vehicle, and therefore you are responsible. They cannot want to abrogate their responsibility and say, yes, it's our vehicle, but we didn't drive it. We've got so many people that drive these vehicles, and therefore this infringement has to fall away. So no, they've got to take responsibility. And that is why the systems make provision for all the responsibilities of the material, however onerous they may become. Chairperson, the other member asked about electronic service and whether infringements will be served by SMS. No, they will not be served by SMS. We are taking leverage of electronic innovations in the world currently. And by introducing electronic service, we are not, and I have to emphasize this, Chairperson, we are not dealing away with any type of service. The traditional form of service by registered mail, it stays there. Every type of service that has been there in the current Act will stay there. We are simply adding other innovations to keep up with technological developments that have taken place. We've got legal precedent that shows a case that came out from the Natal High Court that one can be able to serve a person on Facebook or any of the electronic platforms. And therefore, when we serve electronically, we would use any other electronic platforms to prompt that person so that they are able to know at the earliest opportunity. So an SMS will be used, but it's not a means of service. An SMS will simply say, Mr. Chue, be aware there is this infringement that has been issued against you. The infringer would elect what type of method that they would want. The Department of Transport passed Regulation 32B of the National Road Traffic Act that brings in line the responsibility to be able to update one's particulars in keeping with the confirmation of service. So you would have come to us and said, if you want to serve me, this is my postal address, this is my email address, and this is the method that you can be able to serve. Once you've used that kind of platform that you have elected, in addition, if we have your cell phone details, we will be able to prompt you using a cell phone or using email, using any other mechanism. So it is only an addition. We are not dealing away with any type of service in that respect. The Honorable Member also asked about the integrity of the system and the need to keep the independence of the Infringement Appeals Tribunal. Yes, indeed, we have considered that, the Honorable Member. We take leverage of the empowerment that is attendant coming from Section 29 of the Act that empowers the Minister to be able to categorize different types of offenses and infringement. And in this respect, the majority of what we're dealing with, we are only dealing with administrative processes. Those in the main are going to be infringement. The more serious ones are still categorized as offenses. And offenses are continue to be dealt with by the court system. And the judges and the magistrate will adjudicate over all those. For everything else, we want to deal with them speedily, administratively, at the earliest point that empowers an infringer so that they interactively are able to deal with us while matters are still fresh in their minds. There's also operational challenges, as the DG has indicated, Honorable Chair, that the intention is to lessen the burden within the court system. You would be aware also of articles that have been published and the directives of the National Director of Public Prosecution, amongst which indicates that in the main, any outstanding traffic matter stays in the court row for a period of 2 years. If they have not been attended to within 2 years, they automatically have to be struck off the roll. And that directive was also confirmed just 2 months ago by the National Director of Public Prosecution. The experience that we had during the pilot implementation shows that as we continue to interact with people, they get to know how the system operates. And they intentionally use the system against itself in order to take advantage. And here we're talking about, in the main, actual formally established businesses. And this is part of the litigation that we've always engaged in. People that have been challenging us, taking us to court, having established themselves in those formations, to try and use the system against itself. Over the previous years, there had been a significant amount of applications for representations, which we deal with administratively. Once they start seeing that they cannot get away with the violations through submission of representations, the new practice now is for people to elect to go to court, knowing that they are going to clog the system, and by clogging the systems, these are automatically going to fall away because certain court jurisdictions, Honorable Member, the bad experience that we had, certain court jurisdictions put a specific number of infringements. In this court, we are going to deal with only 50 traffic-related violations per day. Anything more than that, they don't care about it. And if you can imagine, rightfully, as an Honorable Member made an example of millions of infringements that have been issued, they are going to automatically fall away because the restrictions that have been placed by the court would not allow for those millions to be dealt with within the normal court system. So the Infringement Appeal Tribunal is going to be manned by adequately skilled and competent, legally qualified people that sit independent of the RTIA. They do not report to me, they do not report to the agency. In terms of the new insertion of the clause 29, Section 29 of the Act, the Infringement Appeals Tribunal will report directly to the Minister of Transport. And it gives additional benefits to an infringer, that when an infringer is not happy with the decision of the representation officers, those are the ones that are in the employ of the RTIA, they can then challenge it by going to an independent, separate structure, which reports directly to the Minister of Transport. Anybody always has the right to go to court. In terms of PAJA, all administrative decisions are subject to review by court. So in that respect, if one tries to run away to court, the court will ask itself, is there an internal appeals mechanism? If that internal appeals mechanism exists, then the court would want you to be able to follow that process. In those cases where you still are not happy, you would then be able to take those decisions for review or appeal within the court system. And that is what we have provided. The independence is always assured in that respect. I can confirm, throughout the whole process, Honorable Chairperson and members, understand that it is not only the state law advisor, but also the parliamentary legal advisor's offices that have confirmed the processes that we've undertaken, and also confirmed the independence of the processes that have been undertaken, as well as the structures that are related thereto. One of the biggest things that we need to be able to look at, that's why perhaps Honorable Chairperson, it's also another opportunity as we continue to engage for us to be able to enable the empowerment of all of us so that we look at things from the same position. The empirical evidence that informs this strategic intervention is not only one-sided. We have looked at the socio-economic impact that is going to have. That's why the question that the Honorable Member had asked about possibilities of a risk of civil disobedience because of what comes out there. The DG has indicated that this continues to be taken on a daily basis today because this is the current framework that is provided. There are other things that we have taken out being repealed in the Act. I will mention just a few. Number one, at the current moment, as the Act stands, anybody that has ignored the outstanding infringement run the risk. The registrar is empowered to can list that person with the credit bureau. That's number one. We are repealing that part. The registrar is empowered to have a warrant of execution issued against anybody with outstanding infringement. Since the beginning of implementation when we started with the pilot, there is more than 10 million infringement notices that have been issued. There are more than hundreds of thousands that has gone through the whole process that I have the power as the CEO to have issued a warrant of execution. But a strategic decision that we have taken jointly with the department, not a single person has had their movable property confiscated. But that is the power that is there in the Act as it is. Because of the impact of the socio-economic aspect, we thought it is not going to be just to be able to do that. Thus, we have repealed all these things. And these are things that are informed by empirical evidence, and the interventions that we seek to be able to make is to ensure, in the ultimate end, it is something that is going to be socially acceptable by all members of society. And therefore, we remain confident that it is one of the positive interventions that the department is bringing on the table to be able to stem the tide of the carnage that we're experiencing on the road. Yes, indeed, I'm happy that the DG has mentioned that as we continue with life, considering new challenges and experiences that we have, we cannot vouch, Honorable Chairperson, that we will never come back to you with another amendment. However, we can give it assurance that we've done the very best that we can with the knowledge that we have currently. And we can offer that perhaps in another intervention that we have, maybe to provide a general presentation that will cover all the other related aspects that we may not be in a position to cover in the amendment bill, but do have the assurance that this is backed up by empirical evidence, having considered everything else that we may have in here. If there's anything that I've forgotten, the other members of the team, the Chief Operation Officer, may want to be able to add on that.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to add on what the CEO said, I think we should be mindful, Chair, that the administrative adjudication of road traffic offences, it only kicks in when a person has broken the law. So if somebody hasn't broken the law, or broken any law, it doesn't come in. So that's the first thing that we need to think about, Chair. Now, there has been comments by members in terms of the representation officer. We need to indicate and remind the committee that the RTIA does not work for law enforcement agencies. The RTIA is an adjudicator. It's a quasi-judicial institution. The representation officer that we are talking about, thus far, they've cancelled in the region of 80% of all the notices that issuing authorities have been issued. 80%. Simply because the issuing authorities did not do one or two things that they were supposed to do. So the representation officers, they've got the power to actually cancel them. If any authority is doing something wrong, if you are issued a fine that doesn't belong to your car and you prove to us that this is not my car, the representation officer will cancel. If the issuing authority issued with a notice and he did not write what he should be writing in that notice, we cancel the notice. So the representation officers are actually independent of the issuing authority. As a result, Chair, you may have heard that some of the issuing authorities that have been in the panel, they were against us for themselves. Simply because the wrong things that they were doing are now not possible because there's somebody who's looking at them and can cancel those things. So we need to bear that in mind, that the system of ASTO is actually balancing the rights of the infringer as well as the rights of the duties of the issuing authority. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, for the response.
Honourable members, we have now the second and last round. This is still going to be a process. Going to have the submission, the deliberations, the public hearings. So it's a process. So we're not going to conclude everything today. So I just want to caution members. I'll start with those that previously. But I'll give you opportunity, Honorable Makue, later. We'll pass to the last. Honorable Makue, Honorable Shabambu, Honorable Chair. We're not going to have second round, yeah? And then the last one will be Honorable Makue, in that order.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks very much to the Department of Transport as well for the presentation. I want to make an introductory remark and two questions through you, Chair. My introductory remark would just be related to the 14,000 people that are dying on our roads. There are just too many people dying on our roads. For me personally, Chair, it's not a statistic. One of my closest friends died as a result of a road accident last week Wednesday. So I therefore welcome the attempts. I have the following two concerns, Chair. The one is, in the document you're presenting, you indicate that the portfolio committee had the public hearings in 2013. Help us to understand whether the information gathered during those public hearings would still enrich the process now, or is that matured? My second question, Chair, is related to the point made by the CEO about being empirical. Is it possible, maybe, Chair, not now, but you come back to us to say that this legislation has been introduced in that country and that has been the consequence of it, so that we can begin to make a judgment based on that empirical evidence as well. My final, Chair, which is not, it will allow me a question to them, to just ask you for now that we talk before we disperse today on the public hearings on the date that you have been shared. I don't think we should be there now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also echo the very same sentiment that the presentation is good, but mine would be more of a comment than a question. More than three over four of the pilot projects, changes were made after the public participation of the municipality, which is unacceptable. No public participation allows people to add their views. And these changes were also made after the deliberation of the committee, which is the portfolio committee. Rehabilitation cannot be taking the licenses of the people that they've acquired with the difficulty, and that they use as a means of getting or bringing the bread on the table. Therefore, we must have other means of rehabilitating people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just on a lighter note, I would imagine what was the Tasima's view when it was consulted, I think, among the stakeholders. Chair, recently there have been quite a number of issues between the authorities and the various boards. And I see on clause 3, there is a removal of an authority and giving power to the board. I just want to understand the logic behind that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Also, my apologies for arriving late. My question is on rehabilitation, but it's not on the rehabilitation per se, but I believe that you do rehabilitation when someone has made an offense. But my question will be on education and awareness, because I don't think all our communities will be fully informed of this bill, which seeks to assist them. So I just want to check, because I was trying to check in this bill, that if anything talks on education, because we cannot start by talking of rehabilitation without education people. Also, I was interested on the tribunal, is that is it nationally? Are we going to have it in our provinces? I'm sure that the question that was raised by honourable member, I didn't hear any response on that. Also, Chairperson, I'm also interested on systems or trade-off tools. If we want, because I accept the definition, but also the question of tools of trade in our municipalities, also there was a question of capacity, as the authorities will have or traffic officers will have a capacity to do all this work, or tools of trade to make sure that they record everything as they will require them to do. Thank you, Chair.
I just want to make a proposal. You know, and it comes from the responses we have received, rather, from the department. and from the agency. You know, I'll be curious to know how much is it going to cost South Africa, this proposal of the tribunal and the chairperson, the deputy chairperson, and how you want to run it. Because can South Africa afford that? Because all that you are requesting is already there in our courts, but you seem to suggest that our courts are choking. And I don't want to go to an argument of that, because you yourself, by own admission, you are saying here you are going to deal with the administrative adjudication, that is minor infringement, but offences, you know, will be still be in the hands of the court. And if you are saying that, then I am saying the courts are already doing that, where the minor representations or representations are made in court, and you have came up with the counter-argument that our courts are choking and therefore our courts cannot cope with this. I would want a person that in our next interaction, we get the department, you know, the NDPP or the Department of Justice to come and help us here. Because I would want to say, all that you are doing is already there. You are reinventing the wheel for what? Now, if our courts are choking, perhaps we should look at that issue and try to beef our courts. Because this is going to be costly. Our prosecutors are already trained in this. Our prosecutors are already doing what you want to do, the administrative adjudication of these matters, because they look at every representation, minor or serious. Prosecutors, the last time I checked, hence I would want the justice to begin. The last time I checked, prosecutors, what they do, they are doing in the DM, it's called decision making. What they do, they take the dockets home, they look at beyond the court hours, they still sit at home because they are trained in the adjudication. They look at these matters, they take traffic offences that whereupon their representation is made and apply their minds, and then tomorrow they're able to respond. So all I'm saying is that all that you want to do, ladies and gentlemen, is already there in the system in our courts. But all I'm saying is that what you want us to do now is to have what is already there, but it's going to be costly. So show us how what's going to be costly, and the issue, I want to reserve it, the issue of whether our courts are choking. Yes, our courts have got problems in terms of the resources, like any other institution. But I still argue that our courts are capable of this. You shouldn't be having this function. And I would want Justice Department to be here, or the NDP representative, to look at how they are doing it today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, let me give you that. But I not a whole thing, just a
thank you, Cheryl. Make it quickly. Now, I heard that it was said that the pilot project, you actually did use the demerit system. But the demerit system must be seen as a whole to me, and this is the tribunal, the whole process has to go through it. And this did not take place, if you understand what I'm saying. I understand that you said on paper you might have done the demerit system on point. But this person can appeal. He can now go through the system, and this is what I'm saying, the capacity is not there for this appeal process, and then I'm just adding to what Honourable
Thank you, Chair. Before the department, before I'm starting consulting here with the Parliamentary Legal Services, I think there are two ladies here who are with us. I want them to comment first, and then the department can respond on the question asked by members, and also first what the two ladies will be saying. That will be your best, you follow them.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. Chair, I don't have anything to say. I just want to say that indeed we have looked at this bill. We have been involved in the process from the portfolio committee, and we have satisfied ourselves that the bill is legal, it's legally sound, and it's constitutional. Most of the issues that the members are raising are policy issues, which
yes.
I think the department should respond to. They were
the issues that members are raising, they were raised extensively also in the portfolio committee, the issue of the tribunal, the issue of the electronic service, and we've managed to deal with that. But obviously this is a different committee, and it has a right also to ask those questions and satisfy itself that the bill makes sense and the bill will be implementable. Thank you, Chair.
I didn't get a chance to introduce myself earlier on. I'm Shimada, I'm a procedural officer within the NCOP. As for comments, I don't have much to say other than with regards to section 26 and 30. I would just concur with the Honourable Member to make a comment with regards to the use of registered mail. The gentleman did respond to his concern. However, to me as a legal person, the word obligation, the word must in both these provisions indicate to me an obligation, and an obligation meaning the infringer can only be, or the service or the notification will only be recognized if it is served personally on the infringer or if it's via registered mail. You may offer him or her a choice of SMS or whatever other means. Unfortunately, the act restricts you by the use of the word must in only using those two means. Further to this, we have the Electronic Communications and Transmissions Act of 2002. Should the department choose or opt to go for an SMS notification rather than registered mail, it will suffice. The law does provide for it, and it is actually legally binding upon receipt by the recipient.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you. Administrative law is a law of this country, and administrative actions do happen, and administrative adjudication happens all the time. And in fact, it's not new. Even on this one, we do it. Now, administration of the Public Service Act, the majority of those actions that we take, the administrative actions, they are allowed by law, and they do happen. We discipline people. We give you written warnings, we give you verbal warnings, we do all sorts of things. We don't always take each and everything to court. That's what we were trying to say. And we were taking minor infringements out of the court system. And we have been doing it for years. You see, unfortunately, that is not even in the amendment. In terms of the Principal Act, we're doing that. We're doing exactly that. We were just enhancing and improving the system and probably also simplifying it to put another layer before people go to court by way of an appeal mechanism. So I don't know how else can we reply on this question that we are taking offenses out of the, we are trying to take offenses out of the court system with this amendment. No. We've been doing it for some time. We are doing it in many other acts. And like I think Jeff indicated it, that this every administrative adjudication is subject to review by the court. So it is not final. Now, and this is why, he went at length to try and explain that even people are abusing that to go to this 2-year thing, no, fully knowing that after 2 years the NDPP says there is a plan to continue the prosecution. So they are abusing that. But we are still bringing them in to be subjected to administrative adjudication so that we deal with this thing swiftly without. And I'm happy that the committee would want to call the justice cluster, because within government, it went through the justice cluster. We were working very closely with the NDPP on this matter. And in actual fact, I wanted them to say it so that we don't say it for them, that they are overburdened by this minor infringement. And as they are actually relieved that some of them are taken out of their system to be dealt with administratively. So I think I just wanted to indicate that. But more especially, and in particular in the public service, administrative adjudication is basically the norm on a number of occasions. I've just given an example of the disciplinary issues. We'll get subjected to a quasi-judicial process. If you are not happy, then still go to court.
Want to add? Just to add on this one, Chair. We have statistics, Chair, of authorities that have in the region of about, on a monthly basis, 50 to 60,000 cases that are thrown out the court because the court cannot handle them. On the other hand, we have a system where prosecutors have the right to make certain decisions. And if you look at that process, Chair, in my other life, I was one of them. I didn't know the consequences of a road accident. If you bring a notice to a prosecutor, all you have to do is say, can you give me half of this? Some of them, they are totally cancelled, and those people you cannot do anything to them. And it's through that experience that we have to look at a scenario where those people do not have a right to do this. They should deal with criminal issues. And in terms of the administrative adjudication, we've got infringement, which is those that we'll be dealing with, and then we've got offenses. The National Road Traffic Act has 2,455 transgressions. And out of those, there's a few that will go to court being offenses, drinking and driving, excessive speeding. All the others where a person was not wearing a safety belt, it's administrative. So all the majority of this will go into the system where people will either pay or people will make representations or people don't pay and their licenses will be blocked. So the process gives you an opportunity to present your case, and if you are not satisfied about that, then you can go to an appeals tribunal. Mind you, Chair, this is administrative adjudication. Now, the mistake that was done when it was drafted, the court system was put back into administrative process, thereby having, currently I think we have on the system 460,000 people who elected to go to court, and the authorities can't do anything about it. Those notices are paid. That's why we had to bring in an appeals tribunal where it will be an administrative process, and then people can get their result. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it goes back to what I was suggesting earlier, that perhaps we need to depend on the memorandum, because the presentation is a summary of the memorandum in the amendment. But there's a lot of information that you are providing now. I would suggest that perhaps we should have this information in writing. Also the figures, your starting point is the number of people that died, talk about 38, 58, 14, that kind of information, the inability of the court to deal with these matters, that's also the information that I think the should also be provided. Any statistical information that could assist this problem should also be provided, including then those challenges of inefficiency took place in the Swaziland and the Johannesburg metropolitan area. So that information could really assist. Particularly if we could get this information, I don't want to say 7 days, but first we could tell us when that could be made available. But for me, it would be important that by the time we go to the provinces, the provinces have offered this information. When it comes to us, yes, and then we'll say it with the provinces. Yeah. Members, I think we are now concluding for now. What we will be doing, we have in some delay. We had a program with regard to this particular how we're going to be dealing with this process. But because we could not get a presentation earlier when we refused in the absence of the DG or the Minister of the Minister. So that then affected our process of the university. For example, we are only going to issue now the advert for submission this week. We have already applied for Gala approval, but we want to but we will identify major newspapers. But we want to request to our provinces. We made a mistake of leaving out the city press. It's already late now for us to take that. So when you also do your own address, please also include the city press. So that is going to be the process, and then after that, we after this, as we also going to go to the provinces. Let me indicate, I don't think in the repari and the program. Honorable Simon was indicating for the year with me, old program, which was adopted on the 15th of September. The indication that there might be changes with regard to the data and data, but we will double check that and inform you accordingly with regard to the specific week on which we'll be going to the program. Thank you very much.
Just want to propose that we actually go to the provinces in 2018 for two reasons. The one is that we are having, in terms of the vessel, a meeting at this moment on the 28th of October. Then also the other committee that we serve on is having a meeting on the 29th with SA Tourism. And tourism is one of the major contributors to GDP, and SA Tourism is a major player. I think we should consider that. That's the one reason. My other reason would be, Chair, that we need to process the appropriation of SA.
You'll be informed of the authorities. At this stage, we'll ask our officers to see that we continue with other items on our agenda, like the minutes of the thank you very much. You didn't say when you're going to provide us.
No,
Can we, in the, with the minutes, there are three sets of minutes. We start with the minutes that are dated the 3rd of October, which was a very, very short meeting.
I will move that one then.
Okay, can we have a second action? Second
one then. London Dusted.
The fourth, and then the...
We read them beforehand.
Papa. The next set is dated the 4th of October.
Our present chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
The last one, dated the 17th of October.
As the then chairperson, I will move that.
I received a letter through the committee secretary from the Agreement South Africa, that they have sent the presentation with us already, but they are indicating that the CEO, there is an issue that he has to attend to, and won't be available in the next week. So I thought that I must use this opportunity to table the matter here. So that we decide whether they should come at all or they should not come at all. So that also we prevented this the expenditure, the fruitless and withdrew expenditure, because the delegation that comes down, and then we decide that we're not going to continue the meeting. It is a wasteful expenditure. So I wanted to table in this meeting whether we should continue with that meeting or not.
Can I
move
that?
What do you do?
I'll suggest that since we have set a president already, we stick to that. So let's just they must come in the order we prefer when they are ready. But for now, in the circumstances, let's just leave that meeting. But they emphasize to them that we want a full delegation, as we've always taken that stance.
Adam, you? No, Adam, you. Okay. Meaning that then next week they won't have a committee meeting because it will be very late.
Yes,
it will be very late. Yes. Oh, there are two entities on that thing. Oh, sorry, the IDC. Sorry. We hope that they will also be fully represented. That would be something that will need to be followed up now as well. But if not, then we take the same principle. Thank you very much.
Just one thing, Jim.
Okay.
So thank you for the opportunity. Just want to report that over the weekend we were in Gauteng and legislature on the summit. We represented the committee well.
Yeah.
It was disappointing that the ANC folks couldn't attend, but we know that's not, we were on sick leave. I'm not sure about the others. I know Sam Makua was out of the country, but the rest, I don't know. But I wanted you to know, Chair, and the officials, the issue that the DA was at work over the weekend.
Now, we could say that the committee was represented. Then we'll be waiting for the report.
My own candidate.
Honorable Makua, then Honorable Salam.
Chairperson, I wanted to add to Honorable Makua.
Yes.
I was at home and there was nobody there from the DA.
Sorry,
you were in another world. Not the one we lived in.
I would like to indicate that last week I was not feeling well.
Okay.
I was hospitalized for 2 days. And this is the proof.
Honorable members, the meeting is at 10.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Makua, can we indicate
Are we having a committee meeting tomorrow?
No,
just.